Hi, this is Brian Smiga with Alpha Venture Partners Podcast. I'm here today with Brad Harrison of Scout Ventures, and we're going to talk about his category-leading company, Bespoke Post. Hey, welcome, Brad.
Hey, thanks, Brian. Good to be here.
Yeah. So, Brad, tell us first about Scout Ventures. You've got an interesting name, and you've got an interesting differentiation. Tell us about Scout.
Yeah, so Scout is a early-stage venture capital firm headquartered out of New York City. We specialize in emerging technology companies in the areas of big data, marketing tech, and an area that we call frontier tech, which is AR, VR, AI, robotics, drones, autonomy, mobility, and kind of all of those emerging, very tech savvy areas. And while we're based in New York, we invest across the country. We have a special relationship with MIT, where I am a Sloan alumni. And we've also built a pretty good relationship at Carnegie Mellon. Carnegie Mellon and MIT are the top two leading institutions in the area of frontier tech. So we spend a lot of time there. And kind of where we differentiate at Scout is, you know, we are entrepreneurs and operators ourselves. So what we really focus on is helping these companies build the foundations to be great companies. And we do that by helping them avoid four critical pitfalls. Number one, running out of capital. Number two, a bad critical hire on the early team. Number three, a bad early investor. And number four, a bad anchor customer or partner. So we try to stay really involved in the company without wasting the founder's time. We want to be their trusted consigliere. We want to be their first text or call with good news or bad news. And we really focus on leveraging both our LP network and our advisor network to exponentially help these companies scale their businesses.
That's great, Brad. And as another VC in New York, focus more on growth. I know Scout and you and your team have a great reputation for seeing the best seed opportunities in the Northeast, including those coming out of Carnegie Mellon and MIT. So let's talk about this company, Bespoke Post. Tell us about the discovery and the aha moment you had when you met them.
Yeah, so a couple of things. So actually, we met Rishi and Steve came to us through three different channels at once. Number one, I got emailed from another entrepreneur who had met Rishi and said, "Hey, Brad, I met this young entrepreneur. He's working on a company. I think they're in the middle of a pivot, but I think you'll just get along with Rishi, so you should meet him." So through that, we started the dialogue. And then they actually were in ERA for their previous incarnation of the product, which was an app that allowed you to take a picture of clothing, and then it would tell you where that clothing was and how to curate the style around it. They wound up pivoting away from that. But we had seen them because Murad at ERA had also said, "Hey, Brad, I think you would really get along with the founders." And then I was advising an angel network of professional athletes called Star Angel Network. And they got brought into the Star Angel Network investment review with a bunch of professional football players. And I got asked to sit into that meeting. So those guys came through us through three different channels, which is always a good sign. And, you know, we immediately kind of hit it off for two reasons. Number one, when we met them and they were about to pivot into what is their current business model, they basically said, "Hey, Brad, have you ever read a men's magazine and you get to the page that tells you all the things you need for a great weekend away or all the things you need to make a great dinner or all the things you need for a great wine tasting or a scotch tasting? You know how when you read that in Men's Health or Sports Illustrated or any of those magazines, they content curate the page. And then they give you all these URLs and you have to go to all these different places and buy everything." Well, as the magazine content curation is losing influence, we think there's an opportunity to actually put those items together, market and curate the same type of idea to young males, 25 to 45, where we're curating around categories they care about, which is booze, grooming, accessories, women. You know, it was kind of this whole category of things. And I said, I totally get it. Like, I saw this at AOL Time Warner. I remember working on, like, how could we extract more money out? And these guys basically came up with a great idea to curate product, use content to help market the product, and develop a monthly subscription box at a $45 price point, which they would be able to grow. And that's really where they started.
Okay, so there were other monthly subscription boxes for women. Birchbox comes to mind. I've gifted that a few times. Where did Bespoke Post stand in that category when it got started?
So, you know, I think the thing that was unique about Bespoke Post was that I could immediately identify with the items that they were selling and the content that they were
curating. You wanted them, dude, right?
Yeah. I mean, the first couple of boxes that we tested, like, I liked all this stuff, mm-hmm. right? They were cool glasses, you know. It was just really well done because the founders had very good taste. And the thing that really, the reason we wound up backing those founders is that one of them had worked in logistics at Amazon and the other one had worked in logistics at Chegg. And so they had very, very deep understanding of the logistics of sourcing multiple, you know, thousands of units of the same SKU and then optimizing the distribution and fulfillment around that. So to me, the idea was, I get it, right? I've been reading Men's Health, Men's Journal, Sports Illustrated for my whole life. And whether it was Jimmy the bartender or whatever the content section was, it always made sense. Oh, you know, for the Hamptons getaway, you need this duffel bag, these shorts, this suntan lotion. So the idea of marketing that to young guys that had taste, and actually, they don't have to do anything. They just get the box. That was, like, that made perfect sense to me. The two things that I think we, you know, the couple of things that we did that I think were transformational for the company. So number one, when we met the guys, they had raised less than 200 grand worth of capital. They were, you know, coming out of a different product. So when we met them, we did a couple of things. Number one, we said, guys, let us put together $1 million round. We'll lead the round. We'll help put the round together. But let us, number one, put together a round. They said, okay. Number two, we said, you know, is that you guys have no corporate governance. So it's just the two founders and that's great. But I think if we're going to lead the round, we want to put together a board. So we decided to constitute a board that was the two founders and myself as the official board members. And then Brendan, the principal at Scout, was a board observer. So that allowed us to put together like a formal corporate governance. And then the next two things we did that I think were revolutionary in terms of making the business successful was, number one, we said, what can we do to increase our retention? And the number one thing that we saw around all these subscription-based products is if you saw a box that you didn't like, if your only option was to cancel your subscription, you would just cancel your subscription.
Right.
So we came up with the idea of allowing you to opt out of the box. And so by doing that, we were able to do a couple of things. Number one, you didn't cancel your subscription. If you didn't like the box, you just opted out of it. So instead of us losing 30, 40% of our monthly subscribers, which is what a lot of the other subscription companies did, mm-hmm. we actually were able to lower the attrition to 3%. So at a 97% retention rate. And on average, what we saw is somewhere between 51 and 60% of the monthly boxes were opted into. So we gave everybody a choice on every single box every month. That was number one. That became a massive, massive competitive advantage. The second thing we did is we got really, really smart about which boxes worked in the life cycle of the consumer. So we know that if you came in as a new customer and we showed you box A, B, C, and D in that sequence, we knew you were more likely to accept those four boxes because we had data across multiple years of what boxes had the highest sell-through rate. So then what we started doing is, instead of having a monthly box that was the same for everybody every month, we actually got up to the point where every month we might have 20 or 25 different boxes. Mm. And depending on where you were within your customer life cycle with a company would dictate what box you got. And then when we got more sophisticated, we said, oh, and by the way, if you want to opt out of that box, we're going to recommend 3 to 5 other boxes that you might want to opt into. So now we allowed you to opt out without canceling. We allowed you to pick another box if you would so choose. And we were able to optimize your experience. So whether you joined in January or September, you would get the best boxes as your first set of boxes, regardless of when you joined us. That became a massive, massive positive for the company. And then on the heels of that, what we realized is that we had all this data on the content that was getting consumed and the boxes that were getting consumed. So we then opened an online store. And so over time, the online store has gone from being a small fraction of revenue to actually representing 30 to 35% of the revenue. So we now have 65% of the revenue is monthly subscriptions with a very low attrition rate and great lifetime value.
Well,
and
then we
go ahead.
Well, this I just want to be clear on how great a deal this is for men, and I hope our male listeners and also the women who love them are listening, because you guys really delivered on the brand promise. This is just not a generic box you get every month. It's truly bespoke. It's tailored to individuals. And then you can order up through the store more goods. This is a great model, Brad. And it's great to know how you helped the company get to this value add. Just in the interest of time, what does this look like for families and or investors that are interested in the e-commerce space or might have investments in retail? This seems very interesting. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. So, you know, the first thing, and I think if you look at what's been going on in the venture community, is that anything consumer facing really becomes a brand building exercise. And so how do you build a brand? Well, number one, you have to build a brand that consumers can identify with, right? So that's name, aesthetic, UI, UX, you know, usability, customer service, all of those things, right? So we made sure that we were good at all of those things, right? Number one. So let's just build a good brand. A lot of that is a direct reflection of the founders, right? And, you know, Rishi is a very stylish guy. You know, we are not just curating other products. We've actually launched our own white label brand called Line of Trade. Mm. So when we saw an item that we liked, but it wasn't exactly what we thought our consumers would like, we could go out and redesign it using our own brand. So, for example, there's these computer bags that Brendan has and I have and a couple of guys in the office. And they were designed by Line of Trade. And that was actually a designer and a product person that we hired into the company. So we have product procurement, sourcing, and then we also have this kind of like in-house. And the idea is if I can buy that bag from a third party for $30 a bag, but I can make that bag myself for $12 a bag, and it's essentially the same or a better product, well, it's a no-brainer, right? You do the $12 bag. And so I think what they've also done is they've built a very authentic brand, right? The founders emulate the values of the brand. the team, you know, Brendan and I have been integral in the team since they were five people. You know, they're now 40 some odd people. So we've been there as they've developed the team. And one of the things that I've always noticed, and I think it's really good for all the investors out there to judge how successful your company is going to be. We always say it's really good to go to a company holiday party and see, you know, what the attitude is and how the company interacts with one another. And the Rishi and Steve have just done an amazing job of building the right culture within the company. And that gets reflected not only in the products they sell, but the quality of the images, the quality of the content they write. And so they've built this really amazing thing, which is a team of people that really care about curating amazing products for males 25 to 45.
So this company in its current business can get to 50 or 100 million in revenue and profitability. Where do you go from here as an investor? You've done a great job adding value. I want to understand the end game.
Yeah, so, you know, just so everybody knows, when we met them, they were not really doing any revenue. The first year we did $7.5 million and were profitable. The second year we did $13.5 million and were profitable. And last year we did about $19 million and were profitable. I don't know if we have to bleep any of that out. But, you know, my point is they've been profitable from the beginning because we've been very focused on metrics and sustainable growth, right? One of the things I hate about the venture model is when you see these companies that raise $50 million and they're spending $1,000 to acquire a customer where the lifetime value is $200, right? That math doesn't work. Zenefits is, you know, the most famous of those companies. So, you know, this has been about a very, very tight focus on economics, unit economics, and metrics to grow the business. So they've been profitable the whole time. Our goal, and normally our goal as a great seed investor, and you know this because we show you a lot of companies and we work with you and Pritzker and a bunch of other firms, you know, our job is to find a great Series A investor to take them to the next level. And when we think about that, we think about an investor that can capitalize the company on the next tranche of growth capital, but also join the management architecture so that we can add, you know, new knowledge, new expertise. So with the guys at Bespoke, we were very fortunate to, you know, successfully close the team at Walden Ventures as our Series A lead investor. And that's been great. You know, we talked about it this morning at breakfast, you and I, but, you know, an amazing VC, super, super knowledgeable about e-commerce, understands how to scale the business. You know, we're hoping this year we'll do somewhere between 28 and 32 million.
I agree. Really. So we've got you guys who have added the value at the seed stage. Now Larry, Marcus, and the Walden team adding the value along with yours. Is there one more investor that comes in to get you guys to and past 100 million?
Yeah, you know, I think with all of these companies, what you're seeing, at least in the retail category, is you're seeing a lot of activity from the strategics. You know, Brian Spaley, who was Trunk Club and Bonobos with Andy Dunn, you know, those guys brought Nordstrom's in as strategic investors into both of those companies early on. And that eventually led to acquisitions. So I think what we would likely do is either find a strategic investor that would be part of another growth round to say get us from 50 to 100 million, but with an eye on acquisition and putting them into a bigger platform. So what's been interesting, and I won't share the names because, you know, it's confidential, but there are a lot of other organizations out there that actually sell to women, girls, or different demographics that have a large business. that want to add another category. So when you think about the male 45, you know, male 25 to 45 demo, there is nobody that's totally dominating that market today, right? So there's a lot of these bigger organizations that say, hey, if I could figure out how to get $45 worth of mind share of that consumer over, you know, an average life cycle of 19 months, you know, all I have to do is upsell them one suit, one trip, one whatever, you know, and now I've doubled my EBITDA margin on them. So I think what you're likely going to see is somebody that's either in a complementary category or the same category that sees how much EBITDA contribution a business like this can guarantee. Because as I mentioned, you know, the 65% of the revenue that's subscription, that revenue is growing at a steady pace. That retention is holding at a steady rate. So that's fairly easy to model what that EBITDA contribution is. And then every year, the guys outperform on the store revenue. So, you know, I think these guys understand the way e-commerce is evolving for not only the millennial consumer, but the consumer that wants, you know, highly curated, convenient access to cool shit.
Yeah. So we'll take this offline, but I think we'll have some introductions for you on the strategic space here, which we can't mention in the podcast.
No worries.
This has been really great. And if in closing, I'm going to summarize a couple of the really great nuggets of advice that I think came out of this. The first is, if you're a founder, if you can hit the VC through three different trusted, warm intros, we regard that as a positive signal. And to be open to setting up governance right away, that ended up being critical. And, of course, this team had both the style points and the hard-won logistics management points that kind of are the right DNA for this company. Do you have one more closing piece of advice to other seed investors that you'd like to share today that came out of this?
I think this is a broader thing that I think you and I have talked about multiple times and has really been a focus for Scout, right? Like I've been doing early stage investing on and off since 99. In its current format, you know, I've been building Scout over the last, you know, 7 or 8 years. And the one thing that I would tell seed investors is it's not about the technology, it's not about the business model, it's not about any of that, right? I mean, you got to get all that right, but you assume that at this juncture in our evolution, right, like we've got enough people due diligencing that's not where we're going wrong. The key ingredient, and the key ingredient that's made this company successful, is compatibility with coachable entrepreneurs. These guys are a sponge. And so unlike other entrepreneurs where Brendan and I spend 2 or 3 hours in a board meeting and then we walk away, and then the next board meeting we have the exact same conversation because they don't listen to us. These entrepreneurs, number one, always showed up at the board meeting with an update on what we had accomplished as the metrics that we had set forward in the last board meeting. Number two, they always had not 100 things that they really wanted to focus. They always had 3 to 5 things that were critical things that we as a corporate governance focused on every single board meeting. And then lastly, you know, they really just had a good cadence of how we operated the business. We never got too over our skis. We never got too upset when we had bad data. We were very metrics driven. We were very level headed. And in my mind, you know, and Rishi and Steve know how much we love them. You know, they are a special team. And, you know, I remember when they didn't want to put a board together because they were so worried about losing control. And I said, guys, it's not about losing control. It's about you know, getting to the next level. And I think they were able to grasp that. So for me to other seed investors, right, that coachability and compatibility is really the difference between being able to impact and influence your entrepreneurs. And, you know, I view them as, you know, whether I'm playing the older brother role or the, you know, I'm going to stay with older brother. I'm not ready to be the father figure yet. But I think when you play that older brother role, you really, you know, using the Socratic method to really ask questions that allow them to, you know, kind of reach the decision point that you want them to reach is super productive. But ultimately, you know, a little bit of luck, a great team, everybody's kind of, you know, getting together. And so, you know, we have really, really high hopes for them and they deserve it.
So there we have it. Compatibility with coachable teams. So for entrepreneurs, you got to show from moment one that you're listening and you're open and you're coachable. And for seed investors, your ability to be the big brother, to coach, to care enough to be a great coach, to lead by example, that's a great headline, Brad. And we're really happy you shared the Bespoke Post story and the Scout Score story with us today. A great talk, and thanks very much for being here with us.
Yeah, brother, appreciate it. Anytime.